And before the tomatoes go airborne, I'm going to turn the microphone over to our illustrious president of the American Council of the Blind, who probably has much better jokes than I do.
Thanks, Frank. I don't know about, but I do have the dubious distinction of actually having been at a speech that Ralph Nader gave. It was way back in, I think, 1970, and I was a sophomore at the greatest school in California, the University of Southern California. And I am here to tell you, that Ralph Nader was never that funny. If you ever have a serious case of insomnia, go online and find a Ralph Nader speech, any speech. Now, I was given, I also, by the way, had one of the greatest experiences. I actually got to hear Orson Welles live. The fire marshal almost closed down Bovard Auditorium. We had 1,100 people in a 600-seat auditorium. That was cool. I was given two directives tonight. One, and not necessarily in this order, be light and be short. Well, I am light, even though we've got Mediterranean blood. I am pretty light-skinned. And I'm getting shorter every year. So what I thought I'd do is tell a few stories about not just the last 6 years of experiences as president, having mostly to do with travel, but perhaps throw a couple of stories in about some experiences prior to becoming ACB president. And in the category of always make sure that you and your host knows what night you're arriving, and because we're being streamed over ACB radio, I will not mention the state. But I'm sure tempted. No, because she used to live in California. I think it was the first time that Donna attended a state convention with me. I should say at the outset, I've been fortunate in the last 6 years to probably attend half of our state affiliate conventions, and prior to becoming president, I'd attended a bunch of others. But we had a flight, and we had a layover, and we arrived at the airport in this city, in a very rural area, about 1:15 in the morning. Now, airports at that time of night, except perhaps for the international terminal, are pretty quiet anyway. So we land, and we thought that there was going to be someone to meet us, and there wasn't a soul. Well, the first thing I discovered, for whatever reason, is that my cell phone, and it's Verizon then and now, I couldn't make any calls. Yes, it was, actually. I'm not sure why Donna's phone worked, but we finally called the party where we were staying, and the lady kind of sleepily said, "I didn't think you were coming till tomorrow." No, the other tomorrow. Fortunately, the cab fare wasn't too outrageous. And we did get there and all of that sort of thing. But as I say, when you're traveling, always make sure that they're expecting you on the night. Well, make sure you're expected on the night that each of you thinks you're coming. I just got back from Starkville, Mississippi. And it was my second trip to Mississippi. And the really good thing about it is that my oldest stepdaughter lives in Georgia, in a little town called West Dallas, Georgia, which is halfway between Atlanta and the Alabama line. So the two times that I've had meetings, this has to do with the Mississippi State National Rehabilitation Training Center. I represent ACB on their advisory board. So the two times that I've been there, Lori has been able to drive and meet me and spend the night. And this last time, last week, she had my 13-year-old granddaughter, Allie, with her. But it concerned me when I was there 2 years ago as well as last week. I'm thinking, you know, Mississippi, it's kind of a conservative state. And while I was up front and said, yeah, my stepdaughter and my granddaughter are staying in the room, we've got a rollaway bed and all that, same thing 2 years ago, I'm thinking, I wonder if these people really believe that this is my stepdaughter. I certainly hope so. But I have to tell two stories about Starkville, Mississippi. Both of them actually had to do with the first trip there. We are checking into the motel. It's actually a Holiday Inn Express. And there's a chap there, and I like the guy, so I won't mention his name, although I'm sure he's not listening, because he was the NFB rep to the advisory board. I will just say his name is Mr. Brown. And among other things, Mr. Brown is an O&M instructor part-time. Well, for those who don't know, Mississippi State's mascot is a bulldog. And we are checking into the lobby, and in the hallway, on a large table, is a large brass bulldog. Now, if you've ever been around real diehard Federationists with their 90-inch canes and an arc like the Grim Reaper's scythe, Mr. Brown checked in and starts through the doorway and down the hall, and all of a sudden we hear this horrific crash. He took out the table and that poor bulldog. Now, fast forward 2 years. We check in a week ago, Wednesday evening. There's no brass table and no bulldog. They knew we were coming. I didn't have the heart to ask Mr. Brown whether he was looking for it. But you can tell Starkville is a small town. When I flew in the first time, we changed planes in Memphis, and it was one of those prop jobs, small prop plane. Now, unlike it sounds like most of you here, I love small planes. I actually got to fly a Cessna 182 many years ago. It's a dual control airplane. It looks like one of those old driver training cars you might remember from high school. But I had a guy who let me fly his plane for 15 minutes. But we're flying in on a small plane. Well, Friday afternoon, we all go to the airport. It's got one gate. It looks like an airport out of about 1945. And we arrive, and there's a film crew there, a television film crew. And we're all trying to figure out why. We were just an advisory group from all over the country at a meeting at Mississippi State University. We couldn't figure out what in the world. Well, here's what passes for big news in Starkville, Mississippi. We were flying back on the last prop plane that would ever service the Starkville airport. They switched over to small jets the next day, and they had a film crew out doing a story on the last prop flight out of Starkville. You know, we were trying to figure out, was somebody trying to hijack the plane and fly to Orlando or what? So those my stories about Starkville, Mississippi, which they're wonderful people down there, and you know, the catfish is great and the oysters are wonderful, and I got addicted to sweet tea many years ago, so I have to tell a story, though, about Donna.
No. Wait a minute.
Donna, believe it or not, and I really didn't, Donna had never flown until we got together. And she must have seen the Patsy Cline story. Remember the Patsy Cline story? Did anybody ever explain the last scene in the Patsy Cline story? Next to last, just before the funeral scene. There's a pan shot out the window of the plane, and it's foggy. All of a sudden, the fog clears just in time for all of them to see them flying into the side of a mountain. Donna insists on sitting by the window. And that's okay, but she really is a white-knuckle flyer, and I have really been working on her for years. And what I basically tried to do, most of you know who Bill Engvall is. He's Jeff Foxworthy's buddy. And I saw Bill Engvall live at, Universal Amphitheater a number of years ago. And Bill Engvall, his comedy bit is, here's your sign. If somebody does something really stupid, here's your sign. And one of his bits is, I'm sitting at the window, and there's a fella in the middle next to me, and he's obviously not doing so well, but he turns to me and he says, man, this is a real bumpy road we're going over. And we're on our way to Hawaii. So I've been trying to convince Donna for years that we're not dealing with turbulence. We're actually traveling over a bumpy road. But it doesn't work. She doesn't believe me. So she continues to sit next to the window waiting to see what's going to happen. I hope that she'll tell me if anything is. Speaking of fun air flights, air trips, we went to Bangkok, Thailand for the World Blind Union Conference in November. And aside from the fact that flying Los Angeles to Tokyo is about as long as flying from New York City to Johannesburg, which we did 10 years ago or so, it's a long flight. Now, the outbound leg, we went over Hawaii or over the Pacific. So that wasn't so bad. We went L.A. To Tokyo. We had a meet and assist guy at the airport who speaks better English than most of the people I know in L.A. That's because he used to work in St. Louis. I can't imagine a Japanese guy dealing with St. Louis, but that's a whole different matter. And then we flew from Tokyo to Bangkok, and that was okay. Except Donna and I ate more sushi on that flight and that whole week than we have in our entire life. Oh, she didn't eat the sushi. I ate the sushi. I just thought of it as Asian lox. But then there was the flight back from Bangkok. And we changed planes in Hong Kong, and I was really afraid we were going to miss the flight. We had an hour layover. And I was actually talking, I don't know if Paul Leung's here, but I was telling Paul, we landed in Hong Kong, and they were right at the airport, right at the airplane door. The Hong Kong airport is huge. And as things worked out, our first leg was at one end of the airport, and the second leg was at the other end of the airport. Their meet and assist guy got us through three checkpoints, including taking our shoes off two different times, and we got to the plane with 15 minutes to spare. It was absolutely... Oh, and he spoke better English than most of the people in L.A. too. But the trip back, I thought we were going to go back kind of the same way we went, but oh no. We went the polar route in November. I didn't drink a whole lot of coffee or beer on that flight. I think it was an 11-hour flight, and I believe we had our seatbelts on for about 9.5 of those. We started, there were storms from Siberia to Northern California. At one point, though, when the turbulence wasn't bad, I said, "Babe, I'm going to go take a walk." Now, you have to understand, we were on Cathay Pacific, and the folks are wonderful, but my guess is we were the first blind passengers they'd ever had. So the first thing that happened when we got on the plane, when the young lady said, "If you need to use the restroom, raise your hand or ring the bell and I'll take you." And I smiled and said, "It's okay, you don't have to." So I get up, and we're on a 767, I think. So you walk back a few rows, and there's the galley, and you've got aisles on two sides, and the restrooms actually were on the other side, on the other aisle from where we were sitting. So I'm standing, because there were a couple of folks ahead of me, and I'm standing in the galley, and I'm not holding on. I don't need to. It's not it's not rocking and rolling, at least not initially. And the longer I stand there, the rougher it's getting. And finally, after about 7-8 minutes, I have my hand on the galley sink, or whatever it was, whatever the serving area. And, you know, every 2 minutes I'm assuring the sweet young thing, no, I'm fine, thank you very much. Finally, there's an opening, and I go in, and I sit down, and that's when we're really bouncing around. It's the sort of thing where even if you're a man, you sit. Because if you don't, you're going to embarrass yourself. So we made it out of there and got back to the seat and all of that. But, you know, the whole time I'm thinking of Donna, because Donna just doesn't deal well with turbulence. And this was not a fun flight. So we've had some fun times in our travels. You know, every convention that I go to, every state convention, they do things differently. I played bingo in North Carolina. One of the really good guys in ACB is a vendor by the name of Ron Eller. And I just like Ron a lot. But that was my first convention as president. And Donna didn't go with me, and it's a good thing. Because while the South is beginning to get the word about smoking, not every place gets the word about smoking, speaking of my cough. Imagine my surprise when I walked into the restaurant and Ron invites me to his table because he's treating me to breakfast. And even before they bring the coffee, the man lights up. And I'm from California. I'm not used to that. So one makes adjustments, I guess. But all in all, it's been a great 6 years. Most of the experiences have been very positive. I've met some wonderful folks along the way. That lady in the back with about dessert doesn't need a microphone, does she? We don't need any stinking ALDs. And I'm keeping it light, and I'm going to keep it short. I'm about done. Yay! See, I always know what I can expect from California. Oh, absolutely. But I am very much looking forward to getting up on the first Monday morning that I'm not ACB president and saying, screw it, I'm not turning on my computer today. I'm also looking forward to, not that I come to this convention and you know, not say anything, because this is my family, but I've been pretty careful over the years at other affiliate conventions. You know, you have to respect the proprieties, not get involved in other affiliates' affairs. And I've been pretty scrupulous about that. But what I'm really looking forward to, is my first national convention in Las Vegas in 2014. Yeah. Not sitting at the head table and giving the head table folks as bad a time as they've given me over the years. So with that, I will slink off into the darkness. Yeah. Have myself an overpriced beer at the bar and maybe an overpriced beer in the hospitality suite tonight. And I can't. I want to, on a serious note, I want to thank all of you for your love and your support over the last 6 years. You're obviously showing the same love and support to the CCB president, and she needs it. And again, I don't know who all is listening on ACB radio, and I please understand, I'm a little biased. I think the California Council of the Blind is the best ACB affiliate there is. So we all take care, and we'll see you down the road. Thanks.
Thank you, Mitch. It was we enjoyed traveling with you vicariously there, and again, thank you very much for your many years of service to ACB and to CCB. And that's not the end of the thank yous tonight.